Hey, Smartless listeners, it's John Gabris, one of the hosts of Staying Alive, a health and wellness podcast hosted by the unhealthy and unwell. That's Adam Pally and I. And we've got Will Arnett on our pod today. We got to spend some QT interviewing our pod father, and we went deep with him about Is This Thing On, Bradley Cooper, eating right, fitness, sugar, all the stuff we cover on our show. So please enjoy the first part of the interview with Will. And if you like what you hear, come on over to Staying Alive and hear the second half. Hit subscribe or follow while you're there. Hey, Will, thanks for doing this.
Oh, dude, thank you so much.
Gents,
how you doing? Dude, you look awesome. Look at that facial hair.
Really? Oh, thanks.
Yeah. You got some Tony Stark sun. Yeah, you got some sun and you got some Iron Man fucking
Yeah, I was just shipwrecked.
Nice.
You don't hear about it that often anymore, about people being shipwrecked. It's fucking old school.
But I knew I had to do Staying Alive, so I paddled to shore to make sure I did this stupid fucking podcast with you. Yeah.
I hope that the intro music, are we allowed to play other artists' intro music, or it just has to be ours?
I think we should keep it to be just ours.
Oh, okay. Because so it would be cool if today we could play something from Bruce Springsteen, because the boss is here.
Yes, our boss is here. He does not like, we will learn that he does not like to be called the boss, but he is our pod father.
He is the boss.
Will Arnett on the podcast today. Big guest. So we're not going to go into a long cold open because we don't want to turn off anyone who's here to hear Will and not understand that.
it's for anyone new, welcome. We hope that you can learn a little something about what it takes to stay alive as you get older and you don't necessarily play by the rules all the time.
Yeah. Well, without further ado, I'm learning French. Will Arnett.
Oh, is that your next Duolingo?
Triolingo. No. Oh.
The podcast lately, I've been feeling a little podcast burn lately. Oh. I've just stuck.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, of course not. Advertisers, we love it. But
it's so. Oh, I made a joke.
Working your ass off.
I mean, it's. I did this podcast with this guy in the UK. He's so fun. I mean, I forget how long ago. It was like whatever, a couple months ago. And do you know this dude Romesh?
Yeah,
this comedian.
Yeah.
He's so funny. He's really, really funny. So this podcast, and he asked me, and I told him this, like, I have this controversial position. I said, there's a direct relationship.
Is this
relationship.
Tattoos?
Yeah. And I said,
on my feet.
The more tattoos you are, the more you have, the more boring you are. Now, here, I was very clear. A, it's something that I've said to my friends with, I don't have any, that I've said to my friends with tattoos for years, and it's basically a bit, right?
Yeah.
But I say it with it. The people are freaking out, and the comments and the thing. And then I'm like, what a boring response. If you're insulted by it, then you're proving my point. But the truth is, I don't have a point. I didn't even mean it because I have a million friends who are covered with tattoos and people are insulted by it. It's insanity, man.
Yeah, it's crazy when you realize that bullshit is news. Like, all of a sudden you're like, Will Arnett says they did have a guy on Smartlist that they didn't air or whatever.
This goes
everywhere and you're like, who is this matter to? What it doesn't even matter to Will.
It doesn't matter to me at all.
It matters to podcast.
Most of them are bits. Most of them are just to fuck around in the moment, right? And then you're like, and then you hold it up. Let's read this back in court. So your theory on tattoo, it was not a theory. It's a bit.
Yeah.
You said here you love to go swimming with bow-legged women. Is that correct? It's like, I was quoting a fucking movie.
I did it.
Anytime you get, like, even do it, this is all a net loss. Like, this can only hurt. This can only hurt.
That's why
help.
We are so thankful that you're coming on our podcast, because it's just our boss. It's just a fucking minefield of, like.
That's a very loose, yeah.
How are...
Yeah, well, if you're not our boss, that means Rich is our boss, and that is a problem.
That is. You're right, by the way. That's a problem for everybody.
Yeah. If you prefer the term podfather, we could do that, too.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, I like that.
You know what I wanted to ask you? Will, yep. like,
Please be about tattoos.
No, it's
you're
not,
talking to guys who have matching tattoos. So yeah, we are tattoos. Wildly like, boring.
I can give a fuck about. When I saw that, he was like, you know what? He's kind of right. I am a drag guy. Like. My head goes instantly to because now you're like a dramatic leading man. is to what like do you feel how are you thin how are you looking like this
oh physically
and like how because the our show is about staying alive like because right. we're too out of shape or better in shape now we're doing pretty
I don't know if it's the show or like dark medical revelations in our lives
you guys look good.
Yeah,
you guys
look good. We're down, better place.
I'm like down 20 pounds.
See?
Hell yeah, wild. Dude. Yeah. There I'm under 300 for the first time in like 10 years. It feels amazing.
Yeah,
amazing. I might have to start buying new budgie smugglers.
but like, so what are you doing to stay alive? Like, are you, because I have a text exchange that you and I have
yep.
that I found on my phone today from yep. over the summer that yep. I could read to you.
That we might have to edit?
I don't think we do. It's pretty. Okay. I don't think we do.
Okay.
It's pretty base, and it heads into the question. Starts with Long Island, baby. Where are you at? Headed to Ruby Rosa to eat my weight in red sauce. What are you doing? No can do on pizza, but let's hang out this week. Then I wrote back, what are you doing to keep that Walton Goggins physique? And then you wrote back, I start by not eating, then I smoke a couple butts, repeat every day.
And as always, we are not doctors on this show. Do not take any medical advice.
And as someone who struggles with everything, including the smoking.
Yeah.
I'm blood type marinara at this point, so I get it.
It's that old school diet, man. Of just right. I think a lot of people. I look like that dude who, like, now that I'm looking on the thing here, I look like that dude who's like kind of tan and smokes butts and drinks coffee.
Yeah,
I
became drinks coffee. That, plays chess.
I became the guy that I used to go to my buddies. Hey, look at that guy. Right.
Yeah. We all do.
That's who I aspire to be.
Look at me. I look like fucking Mark Maron drowned in a pool.
Yeah, I look like an offensive lineman in court for a fucking DUI.
I
lock the gates. How come you didn't lock the gates? I drowned in the pool.
Jesus Christ. Jesus. You know what the truth is about, what are we, about 18 months ago, one of my agents was like, hey, you should go talk to this doctor, like out of the blue.
Not out of the blue for you, but that's something that was on the agent's mind.
Nothing is ever out of the blue, no, man. No.
Meanwhile, like the CAA had a morning meeting about my weight, and they go, and he goes, you should go see this dude who's basically like a nutritionist and talk. He's like, what? So and that's a true story. And I was like, I think I always was able to stay thin, and then I got over 50, and as you know, like it gets hard when you're over 50. It's just, and they're like, so like, I'm going to eat what I want, but I'll just work out. And then you just get massive. So I was like, what do I do? So I went to see this guy, and he helped me look at the stuff I was eating. And he was like, okay, And it, like, you know, you tell him, he's like, how, what do you, you know, you tell him like, it's not that bad. And then you tell him, he's like, wow, that's terrible. And you're like, oh shit, really?
Right.
Yeah. The worst with those kind of situations is when you downplay what you're doing and they still say it's bad. You're like, yeah, I have like two beers, like a couple of nights a week. And they're like, that's really bad. I'm like, oh, I was lying already. Yeah. That's a good.
I did that once years ago when I used to drink, and this guy said, I went to this doctor and I could tell, and I go, this is like early 90s. And he goes, how much do you drink? And I said, and I'm thinking like, what is going to be? I go, probably six drinks a week. He's like, that's a lot. And I'm thinking, motherfucker, that's before I go out. I have six drinks. Yeah.
Like, that's a day.
That, yeah. So
Adam and I are very adjusted to telling a doctor, not cigarettes whenever they ask you to smoke.
And, like, and I can't even do that anymore. I've regressed. I've regressed, so I can't even do that anymore. Now I'm lying about cigarettes to a doctor in New Zealand who's like filling out a physical. I'm like sitting at like the, in order to get to set, they're like, a doctor's going to come in here. You all right with that? I'm like, yeah, whatever. Guy comes in. He's like, says he, 3 to 5 drinks a day. I was like, I don't. No, I don't know. I don't know.
I didn't even fill that out. Somebody else wrote that.
Else guessed that when they saw me.
Well, it's metric down here, right? So, yeah, it's not actually the same amount.
Yeah, and a day, you mean tomorrow, because tomorrow is our yesterday. So.
Yeah, yeah, so I'm counting. Yeah, oh, we're not doing time zones? Okay. Yeah.
Next thing I know, he's like writing like psychopathic conversation. Like, yeah.
Borderline personality disorder.
Yeah, borderline.
I ended up cutting out basically sugar, which is my number one, I think my number one addiction, because I'm not addicted to cigarettes. And they're addicted to me.
Well, you're such
cigarettes
a badass.
And I are synergistic. Yeah. Where we help each other.
They've never let me down. They've never lied to me. They always told me what they were going to do.
Meanwhile, they're like lying to you from the moment you.
I know.
I was going to say, like, sugar. When you say no sugar, like, how strict are we talking? Are we talking like no, like, you go out to sushi, you're doing sashimi?
Yeah, basically, when I'm really doing it, I eat. Oh God, it's so boring. But
on this podcast.
I know.
Also, we kind of live in the boring world, so don't let.
I got a bunch of tattoos, man. This is the shit I'm into.
You're right. It's so good. It's so good.
You're like, I hated that this blurb went around and we brought it up 11 times in one interview.
No, I love it because it's so dumb, because it was so meaningless. Ramesh is laughing himself.
You know what I took from that clip is like, Ramesh is like, he's like, I have a lot of tattoos. Am I boring? And I wanted to be like, no, but the Apple Watch is making you boring.
We should be.
Tattoos are fine. It's the Apple Watch.
So you cut out sugar.
So I basically
was that difficult? Like, do you have anything that you did for yourself? Like any substitutes or anything like that?
I'm addicted to ice cream. I fucking love ice cream. Like
my favorite sweet.
It's my fucking favorite. So I'm like every day for me is like a 9-year-old's birthday party leading up to this. When I every day you'd be like, what are you doing? And so I had to like go. So I had to go. To answer your question, I didn't even go for sushi because I couldn't. I was too nervous that I wanted to eat the rice, right? So then so every day I'd wake up, and eventually I was doing a little bit of oats and then some berries and whatever, and then like a little snack, and then lunch I have a salad with chicken, and then at dinner I have to have like 18 ounces of protein, fish or meat, and some veggies. And then, actually, there's a crazy thing here. So I did that, and then eventually I could have a cup of rice with lunch. Then he got, and then like 45 days into it, he's like, now you got to cut all the carbs. So now I have none. And I don't have a cheat day. I have a cheat meal once a week. Every 7 days, I have one cheat meal.
Jesus.
And he's like, don't go downtown go uptown, meaning like, don't eat a bunch of crap on your cheat meal. Don't go to like Taco Bell and McDonald's.
Right.
Have a nice high dessert. Class. Yeah. Have a nice dessert that doesn't have like a bunch of preservatives in it. And so I've kind of stayed to that for the last year and a half. And I've had a couple times where I haven't been able to, but for the most part, I've stuck with it and exercised at the same time. and it's been pretty good. Here's a cool thing that he taught me.
What kind of exercise are we doing?
I just do, you know, street fighting mainly. A lot of street fighting.
Your Kimbo Slice in the backyards of Florida.
It's hard to find a good gym.
But it's easy to find a street fight.
I'm doing, you know, I do pretty light in terms of the gym. Pretty light. I was doing this thing where I was like, I don't do it as much anymore just because of time or whatever, but I was doing this boxing thing called Fight Camp, and Thoreau turned me on to it, and it's like you get like a – it's almost like Peloton for boxing.
Yeah.
I look like the loserest boxer of all time.
Oh, but, I'm the worst in that.
But the cardio of it was really great. So I do that a couple days a week. I do these like sort of long walks and or hikes, and then I do stuff with like kettlebell. Pretty light stuff.
You got a trainer? You're doing this on your own?
No, I do it on my own. I'm pretty consistent.
That's nice. Cool.
Yeah. And so that's been good. He taught me this really cool thing, which is he's like 40 minutes before you go to bed, before you're going to go to sleep, eat like a cup of berries or a sorbet. And he gave me a couple brands, so that you get that spike of natural sugar and then you'll crash. And you'll go into sleep better, and you'll sleep better. And goddamn it, he was right.
Oh, and there's probably the psychological element of like, now I get to have my treat,
and then
a little treat, and then you're going to bed, and like, oh, that's a real interesting wind down.
Pretty insane, insane.
My version of that is I switch from a joint and a bourbon to a joint and a chamomile tea.
Oh, that's
and that
nice.
Has been, and I'm out on my balcony sipping tea and having an indica, and I'm like, I'm going to sleep like a baby, and it's so much better for me than two fingers of fucking Basil Hayden's. Two fingers.
Well, I mean,
much like my OnlyFans, I prefer a little more than two fingers.
Well, I mean, alcohol is the big thing that like, I mean,
it's the saboteur of your health.
Yeah,
it's like
it's
you
the
let it in.
A1 killer.
Yeah. It's trash, and it's for a lot of different reasons. And yeah, I don't drink. I'm so happy that I don't for myriad reasons. But one of them is that, you know, the every time there's a new study that comes out, which is like every 4 hours.
Every 4 hours, Huberman's making a fucking proclamation about, I can't believe we ever drank alcohol. You're like, oh, come on, man.
Yeah.
And I just think, oh, thank God I don't. And I do, yeah. I do feel better as a result of it. And you can't do it as you get older too. Like you just can't, like your body can't do it.
It's harder. It takes more and more of a toll on you every year.
Like, I want to quit smoking butts. I really do. And, I don't smoke as much as I used to.
Are you thinning?
Yeah. I mean, I just put one out. Wow. I just stubbed one out.
That's the level. I have a problem zinning. I can't do it. I can't.
So many of my friends are zinning. Some of my friends are zinning and still blasting cigs, which is like, I'm like.
Yeah, that's me. I don't do it at the same time.
At the same time. I've got people who are telling me that nicotine is actually like a nootropic, and it's like.
It is.
It's like a performance enhancer.
It is. Well, we actually just had Huberman on the podcast, and I got to say, he was
awesome.
Pretty great, and I ended up being fascinated with everything he was saying, and I didn't want it to end. And I was like, and then what if I do this? And what if I was like, the little kid, you know?
Yeah.
And he talked about nicotine and how great it is.
Yeah. Here I just is. Look like I have 9 zins in my mouth at all times.
Yeah. Will's hitting the 5 milli, what do they call them? The 5 mil lip pillow or whatever.
Is that what they, I'm on the 3 right now, but I go back and forth between the 3 and the 6s.
Ooh.
And God. then what does it do? It's just like a pouch, like a baseball player, or is it like, or you swallow it? Or like,
No. You just put it between your lip and your teeth. It takes a second to get used to. It's like these little pouches like this.
And I know for a fact, based on our experience, that Adam can't handle just packing a lip with something. We did recreational ketamine together, and you're supposed to just put it in your lip. And Adam's like, I chewed it and swallowed it. I was like, what the fuck?
You can't leave it there.
No.
I little kid.
Like, I played baseball in high school, and like
swallowing sunflower
instantly, seeds. As soon as that shit started, like as soon as you go from sunflower seeds to like the first kid brings in chewing tobacco, I was just like yeah. I could never pack a lip. In high school, I can't do it.
That's funny you saying that. I have a weird time. Half the time when I would go to get it out of my lip, I start to gag.
I have something about that place. Yeah. It's also, I also gag when I put my contact lenses.
Well, I think you're supposed to put them in your eyes. not the back of your throat. I thought you swallowed. I have no gag reflex. Wow. Again, I'm sorry. That's for my OnlyFans. Like, clip that for my OnlyFans.
Fuck, that's a great clip on its own.
That's going to be the clip.
That, I mean.
It somehow gets credited to Will, unfortunately. It's like Will Arnett's got no.
Will Arnett says tattoos are bad. Again.
Never live it down. It does make you think about Tom Hanks. God, he's done so many different things. The dude's kind of unreal.
I was just thinking about his run the other day. Like,
it's unreal, right?
His run from like Joe versus the Volcano, maybe. Even I mean, Splash is the original, but like he made a few clunkers.
I mean,
They never stuck. They didn't stick to him.
Yeah, because like a clunker for Tom Hanks.
Yeah, but he made like 60 movies, and he made like 30 really good movies. So like
half of them.
I'm gonna let him have. I mean, mine is I made only clunkers. Do you
know what I mean? Dude, I was gonna say, like, do you know if you looked at my IMDb, like average, I'm batting 164 in the minors. Dude,
Hanks also did like 10 years of dominating comedy and then switched to drama and then was the go-to drama guy for like another decade. Like
that's similar to you, Will. You're a little late, but a little late. But
I don't think I'm
Brother Solomon.
I don't think I'm dominating anything.
I don't know, dude. I think it depends on how you look at it. Like, this is your turn to Hanks run it just a couple years later than he did.
We're just here doing we a go, few man. More terminals than
I decided
anyone else.
To wait till I was 55. Because I didn't want to embarrass anybody.
I love it when people do say to me sometimes, they're like, do you ever think about doing like a drama, like changing up? And I'm always like, yeah.
I'm trying to do comedy. I'll do drama.
I think about it all the time.
Yeah,
of course. What do you got?
Yeah. They're like, you know what you got to do? You got to work with really good directors.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, great.
I'm done.
Yeah, I'm available.
I would love that. Have you showed them my extensive 20-year television career?
Yeah.
Because you could Google me.
You got a number on them? Number on them?
It's like, oh, it'd be so cool if you worked with Wes Anderson. You're like, fuck yeah, it would.
Yeah.
It'd be fucking awesome. It would rule.
That's the real like grown up version of your aunt saying like, you should do the Conan O'Brien show. You should do what he does, you know? And you're like, yeah, I would love
you're
to.
You're right. I should.
I should get on SNL at 44. I could speed run my fucking speedball death.
I was going to ask you about this press run that you've been doing because it's a dream of mine as someone who's worked, you know, in comedy the way you have for a long time, to see you doing the like Academy Award run press tour where you're like in cool clothes and like, you know what I mean? And there's like pictures of you in a swimming pool with clothes on.
Yeah.
You know, and there's like,
yeah, you're sitting cross-legged in like the W lobby with like a bourbon
and
like, or something.
And like, and then there's like an interview with you and Odessa Azion together. You're like, you're doing it, you know, like, how does that feel? Like, do you ever, does the comedian part of you ever, because I consider you like a comedian, you are one of you're a comedian. Like, does that side of your brain ever click on while you're doing, while you're doing it all, while you're like, wow, this is new?
A gazillion percent. And so what the difference
like, how do you
is,
do that?
Well, yeah, I spent a long time, you know, doing stuff and fucking around. And what happens is, by the end, like when you do something with, as part of that, when you go and you do something like with Ramesh and I'm just dicking around, it's so fun because then I just get to dick around, which is why I say a bunch of stupid shit that I don't mean, because you're just having fun, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of those things, you got to go and, you know, look, the movie we made, this movie is this thing on that Bradley and Mark Chaplin and I wrote and we worked on for, it took like from the time that we decided to start doing it until the time that it came out was like 7.5 years or something, right?
Jesus.
Yeah. That's... And so, we took it really seriously and we did it and and we spent a lot of time on it, obviously, and a lot of care. And so you come out with it and then when they start to, you know, start thinking like, hey, maybe this has a chance for people to recognize it for X, Y, and Z, you want to give it the, you're doing a bunch of different stuff. And so you want to speak very, it's tough because you don't want, for me, I feel like, man, it's hard for me to be that earnest in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. It. Comedy is not, yeah. Comedy is inherently like,
you want to undercut yourself and yeah. undercut the situation so frequently.
Yeah. Yeah. But then you know what? The same rules apply in that you just got to read the room, which is, these are people here who are appreciating it, and so that you do take it seriously. And I did take seriously doing the project itself, and I do really like it, and I am really proud of it. So then, but there were times when, yeah, where you just kind of like, you fuck around. But a lot of the time, you know, the questions are different too. The questions are like, why did you do this? Or what is the message? Or, you know, what was the process like? And you're like, well, actually, the process was pretty serious. Took a lot of preparation. to do those scenes took a lot of, we workshopped for a long time. And then you find yourself down this road. And I did have a few times that there were some really cool interviewers who were like, I see that you're struggling with talking about it in this serious way. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah,
well, there's another layer to it too, that you're a comedy guy doing serious interviews about a serious movie about comedy. It's a quadruple 4D cake or some shit.
Yeah, man.
That's a thing.
Yeah. It's complicated. And then, but at the same time, and then what happens is it's very alluring because people do respond to it and they're like, hey, we really liked it. And we thought it was a great story. And you're like, you're kind of forced to put your guard down. It was tough for me to kind of talk about it, me and or it in this way that didn't feel like I was like catching myself. I didn't want to seem like I was being self-aggrandizing. Do you know what I mean?
Or this is the most understandable like headspace to be. My therapist one time said to me, do you ever use positive self-talk with yourself? And I was like, no, why? That would be corny. He's like, no, that is something you need to like.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, fuck. I never like, it's so easy to just downplay everything. But then when you're a part of something larger, like a piece of art that you're involved with other creatives, that you're like, well, I can't go out here and downplay this because I worked hard. Other people worked hard.
Yeah.
My instinct is to like undercut myself for the sake of comedy and to not come across as like a guy who is too serious.
What made it easy was in certain ways was that the people I worked with, you know, Bradley, you know, he's
I got a billion questions.
Yeah, he's an incredible he's an incredible filmmaker, right? I mean, I've known him a long time. His capacity for all of it is so insane, and his concentration and his focus is so intense in the best way. And Laura Dern, who's one of our greats, you know, and she's just
Meryl
incredible.
Streep-esque.
And so you kind of you start to get in that, you know. I heard, but what's interesting is so that part of it made it really easy. And then when you listen to that and the way they talk about it, you're like, okay, yeah, I can talk about this thing. And I did take it seriously. You know, what's weird is, you know, as Pally, you were saying that like you go and you're doing these like screenings for the Academy and stuff. And of course we didn't get any nominations for anything for our film.
Not about that.
I know, but what's weird is you get put in this place where you've got to go and do that. And then you're disappointed. And then you're like, I heard Ben Affleck talking about it. I think on Kimmel maybe or something recently. And he was much more articulate than I was, but about this idea that people are like, oh man, sorry, didn't get the thing. And you're like, I didn't even, when we made it, it's not like I was thinking like, wow, we're going to make this Academy Award winning
right
thing.
When we you get just, drafted in the NFL, you're not like, fuck.
I just want to get,
if I don't
yeah,
win
I just
the Super Bowl, this
I just
is
a, get
yeah,
on the
yeah,
field.
Exactly.
And that was it. We just wanted to make something good. So
played a great game.
So it's confusing. And I remember my 15-year-old said to me, and he's such a great kid. And you want to talk about it. This kid is so funny. He's an absolute bit machine. It's unreal. It's unreal.
It's in the genes.
Do not introduce him to my son. I don't need two of that. Dude, my son is
a nightmare.
Yeah, bit machine, right? Yeah, it's insane. And we were driving home, and I was driving him home somewhere. I was out here in California, and I said, and we found out like that we something came out. We didn't get recognized. And he goes, and I hung up, and I go, yeah. He goes, what happened? I go, yeah, it's a bit of a bummer. And he goes, don't let the fact that that happened ruin what you think about this great movie that you made, Dad. And I was like, you're right. You're absolutely right. It was so dope. It was so dope. And like, it took my 15-year-old to give me the perspective.
Yeah, the clarity comes from the most wildest places sometimes. you worked with our mutual friend. Oh, real quick. My buddy, Bob Castrone.
Dude, Bobby Castrone is one of the all-time funny dudes.
Yeah, he's one of the best. I met him when I was a PA at Best Week Ever like 20-something years ago when I graduated college, and we've been tight ever since.
I mean, you want to talk about Bit Machine. Bob Castrone. So Bob came with us when we were doing, because as you know, he used to be a stand-up back in the day.
Yeah.
And so when I started doing stand-up and was going to the Cellar when I was living...
Were you using your name? Were you using, would they say, ladies and gentlemen, Will Arnett?
No. I was using the name of the character, which,
cool.
Which was, yeah. And
some fucking
I know.
Kaufman
well,
shit.
I was doing it. Yeah. I think people were like, is he doing some low rent Andy Kaufman ripoff?
Daniel Day-Lewis over here. Yeah,
Daniel Day-Lewis doing
set,
it.
On the set, everyone call me Will.
I'm living the life.
All right. Everyone treat me like Will. Okay. A stand-up comic is going through a divorce. All right.
Yeah, so I would go down, and so Bob came with me, and because we wrote all the stand up, that's in the film that kind of tracks where this character of Alex is going and stuff, and so I wanted to have that experience, truly what it was like to be this dude. I'm not a stand up, so I'd never done it before, but I wanted to understand what that experience was going down and being that dude, and so really what I got to do is kind of rehearse for 6 weeks, and going to the Comedy Cellar every night and walking downstairs and being introduced as Alex Novak. And people did I'd get up there, they'd sort of snicker and think like I was losing my mind or whatever. And
but poor then, guy, poor Will, he's going through it. Alex.
I did joke though people were so I'm getting divorced and stuff, that people are Googling like, this asshole got married again? Like, what?
And you were doing a super high-pitched voice, right?
Yeah, no gravel. I was doing like this.
Dude, the worst part of that was lugging that prop bin up and down those stairs, though, right?
I'm glad you guys did the rewrite to make make Alex not a prop comic. I think that was a smart move.
It was such a... I'm glad we dropped that because it was
hard to get the shit up and down the stairs.
It was so...
The art department was furious that they were so happy.
I mean, everything. The plunger, the chicken, the glass, all of it.
And you got to be careful with it. You can't just throw it down. You have to place it.
There's an anvil in there. You can't throw it down.
That's going to ruin the chicken. We come from improv, as you know.
Yeah.
And so that is a different thing. Like we had all this training at the Upright Citizens Brigade in New York.
So much stage time. But
so much
no crossover.
Where you're like, oh, I can get on stage. I can get on stage with no material in front of however many people and feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, but that doesn't mean anything. That's not currency. That's not, it's not music. It's like shitty jazz, in a way. It's like,
well, what was interesting was, so when I was, so when I'd go down there, the first time that I did it at the Cellar, we walked down the stairs and I was there with Bob Castrone and Bradley. And we're standing there by the doorway, downstairs there at the main room there. And I'm about to, they're about to call me up, and Bradley knows me, and he knows that if I get up there, that because I didn't come up through improv, I wish I had. I wish I'd known about it. I wish it existed in that way when I was coming up.
You're pretty adjacent. I mean, you
I'm adjacent. I'm adjacent.
We've hung out at McManus enough
for
you to be considered an improviser.
Yes, but like I wish... I just wish that was kind of around more when I first moved to New York in 1990. Like, yeah, it just wasn't. So, but he knows that my instinct is that if I get up, if I walk down there and get on stage, that I'll try to figure out a way to make, to squeeze out a laugh somehow.
Right.
To make it work. Like you said, to make it work, to do something and whatever. And he, the first time he stopped me and he puts his hand on me and he leans in and he goes, "We're doing something different." And basically he was saying, "You're not doing that. We're here to do this. This is the job. And so go out there and do the material as Alex and do Alex's material that we do from the film," which is what I did. And that was really dope. Yeah,
because the impulse would be to be like, "Oh, I know how to impress this crowd. Yeah, I'm a funny guy. Give me a mic.
Just lean on my sweaty bits." You know what I mean?
Yeah, the tattoo thing. Let me try something out here, guys.
From everything you said, I mean, I've had a director that I've really loved working with, that I trust, you know what I mean? But I never had a friend who is also my director, who's like, it must have been really bonding when you're doing this, if you guys are like going undercover, writing the movie as it's forming, you know what I mean? Like, that's pretty special to have a friend that's like, "Hey man, don't do your bullshit tonight. And then, but trust me that I'm going to have your back and make you look good."
100%. And it was, you know, again, because I do, I got to see sort of under the hood over the last couple of years as we were working on developing it, what an incredible mind he has for this kind of thing and for making movies. And so I trusted that in that moment. And it did help us. You're absolutely right. I mean, in terms of weeks later when we actually start shooting, I do, that trust is just built in such a strong thing. And then, actually was, you know, coming to those moments where we had these really insanely vulnerable moments in the film, and I've got to trust him. And he's, you know, I've never done anything like this on film in this way. And I had to kind of, you know, we talked about it and he'd be like, "You got to trust me that you have to, there can be no bullshit here. There's no acting. There's no bullshit. You have to, and we got to go deep." And he would like pull the camera off. He's operating too. So that was the crazy part.
Soderbergh style. It's like,
yeah. So, yeah. He, and it's,
well, that's also, where's he going to sit? There's no freaking chairs.
There's no chairs. By the way, there's no chairs. There's no Video Village, right?
Yeah.
Everything's it's intense. Like, from the moment you show up, from call time to wrap, there's never a break. There's never sitting around.
I wish for that.
It's amazing. So you're always engaged, and he's right there. He's a foot from me with the camera in my face, and he's talking to me as we're rolling. And he's like, "Here we go.
Hell yeah.
Here we go, man. Here we go." And then you go like, "We got to go. We got to go deep on this. We got to go. You got to fucking throw it all away." All this kind of shit. It was dope, man. It was... scary as fuck.
That is amazing.
Can you introduce us to Bradley?
I'm not ready to hang out with Bradley yet. I need a couple more years.
I'm not concerned that he's ready to make a movie with me.
You guys should work with Bradley.
I didn't say movie. I don't want to hang out. I'm not ready to hang out with Bradley yet. I need a couple more years. Because like there are people like that in my life who like, I feel like I'm going to meet Bradley Cooper and I'm going to be like, "I got to get more like Bradley Cooper." And you know what I mean? And like right now, I just gotta.
I can't handle that identity crisis.
I can't handle that right now. I gotta just figure out me.
He's crazy inspiring. I mean, our whole relationship went into a totally different gear, and he really inspired me in so many ways. It was pretty sick. And
are you gonna do it again? Obviously, the material you're getting. A different look now, right? Like there's got to be cooler stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
or a more variety of things in front of you that you can do next.
Yeah, for sure. That's exciting. That's the exciting part. And I'm not. What's funny is again, I think because I'm 55, I'm not precious about it. I'm not like, "Hey, now this is what I do." Yeah. But I had these like really sort of very. what should be obvious realizations, but it's taken me a long time where I go like, I only want to do stuff that I respond to.
Wow. Like, I haven't had that revelation.
Like, what? And like, yeah, I want to do it. And so it's been cool. Yeah. And it has been different. You know, I just finished this thing with Tony Gilroy, which was pretty dope.
Oh,
yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Hitter. Cool.
Yeah. And with Pedro Pascal. And that was really awesome. And Olivia Wilde and a bunch. It was pretty dope. And so just a small little thing, but like really cool to be able to kind of do some different stuff. So that's, I'm pretty psyched about it.
Are you looking to downshift and to do a comedy again and be like, oh fuck, like safety. I feel like a lot, like, you know what I mean?
Clydesdale out of the gate.
Did you get a taste and you're like, let's see what else is in there. Let me keep digging.
You know what? I think it's more, I don't think that I mean, that's always alluring, right? Just because you want, because if you read something really funny, you're like, oh, that'd be really fun to go fuck around and do that.
Right.
But at the same time, I think that it is much more about like, and if it ends up being something that's funny, that's great. I just want to do something that feels, as you know, it takes time away from your life and your kids and all that kind of stuff. So it's got to be something that feels valuable. I get to screw around like you guys do on with Jason and Sean all the time. So that scratches a lot of itch, oddly enough.
Right. Yeah. That's actually kind of cool when your quote unquote day job is like riffing with other talented, funny friends.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a little spoils you a little where you're
a
like,
little bit.
I don't need to chase this high elsewhere.
Yeah. A little bit.
Yeah. I hope you've been enjoying the interview with Will Arnett as much as we enjoyed doing it. So if you want to hear the second half where we get into Will's morning routine, his kids dunking on him, an extended conversation about Benicio del Toro, then you got to go over to the Staying Alive feed anywhere you get your podcasts. Hit subscribe or follow while you're there. We've got other great conversations with people you'll know and love, like Mandzukas, Mark Maron, Scott Aukerman, Casey Wilson, Ego Wodum, Eric Andre, etc., etc. Come listen to a very funny people telling us what they do to stay alive. You have been listening to Staying Alive with John Gabris and Adam Pally, a SmartList Media production in association with SiriusXM. Executive producers are John Gabris, ooh, me, Adam Pally, ooh, you, Will Arnett, Jason Bateman, Sean Hayes, Richard Corson, and Bernie Kaminsky. Yes.